A bright light shines behind a globe. As the view zooms out to the depths of space, millions of stars cluster around the globe and its surrounding atmosphere. Clouds fade in, and a logo nestles between the blanket of white. Lionsgate. On a black background, orange sparks shoot out from an O. The sparks trickle down as a golden light twists, revealing the logo, Grindstone Entertainment Group. A painted scene shows a man standing underneath a beam of light as a woman and her cat watch from inside a home. Figures creep out of a green portal before a logo appears. Astral Plane.
Hey, Mom, why do these cookies taste so good?
Chips, they're made with lard.
More logos appear. Slated. Moo Studios.
For shirts as crisp as the bacon he brings home.
In a sleek 60s-inspired home, a redheaded woman with long curly hair casually dusts off a coffee table. A blonde housewife with short hair holds out a white dress shirt from an ironing board as a brunette woman vacuums a small rug in her living room. Text appears as a white-haired man in a suit and sunglasses peers out of his open car window. 1963. He watches as another car pulls into a driveway. Climbing out of his teal ride, the white-haired man straightens his suit jacket and strolls over to the other car.
Anthony!
Mr. Banner.
A package.
How are things?
Copacetic. Mr. Banner, copacetic.
Little something for the wifey.
Yeah, I just stopped off.
So how does the missus like my neighborhood?
Oh, good. She's on cloud nine.
Ah.
Mr. Banner runs his hands along Anthony's sleek white Thunderbird.
Oh,
sleek.
She's quite a possession.
She is. Mr. Banner, I probably shouldn't keep Joanne waiting. Excuse me. All right.
A smile plastered on his face, Banner gives Anthony a wave as the brunette man heads inside.
Hi, doll.
What took you so long?
Frederick.
Banner?
He cornered me again. He's off.
I caught him staring at me while I was in the garden the other day.
What? Joanne, I said I didn't want you to speak to him. Seriously. How was your day?
It's okay. I wish I was out and about like you, having adventures.
I did get you something.
You shouldn't have. Did you get me a new drill to fix the dishwasher? No. You got me books. Did you find a copy of The Naked Lunch?
Open it.
Joanne unties the pink ribbon around the box and pulls out a satin cream-colored bra.
Nope. Undies.
Come on, Joanne. Don't be a wet rag. Go put them on.
Am I just here for your amusement?
She stands and leans down for a kiss.
Sometimes.
Anthony watches her go. In her bedroom, Joanne sets out a pink dress with a matching cardigan. She wanders toward her vanity, wearing only her bra and underwear with connected garter stockings. She slips on a pair of fuzzy heels. She picks up a perfume bottle and spritzes herself.
Margie Grady said the new pulp novel by Robert Bloch was good.
Gazing at herself in the mirror, Joanne sprays a bit more perfume on her chest before setting down the bottle. With a tube of lipstick in hand, she leans closer to the mirror. She carefully applies the soft pink coloring to her lips, presses them together, and eyes her finished look. She saunters out of the bedroom and into the hall, leaning against the doorway. As she struts down the hall, a tuft of gray hair peeks out from an ajar door. The door creaks open further, revealing Banner. Joanne's smile drops as she spots the man in front of her.
What are you doing here?
You and Anthony look so happy together. I admit, I haven't felt like that since my Alice passed.
She holds his gaze, nervously swallowing at the man in the shadows.
You sure do look lovely, Joanne.
A cold smile stares back at her. Keeping her feet planted, Joanne calls over her shoulder.
Anthony!
Lower your voice, please. Don't make me take off my belt.
Anthony! Anthony!
In the living room, Anthony hangs motionless from a noose. Text appears over black. Lionsgate and Grindstone Entertainment Group present, in association with Slated and Moose Studios, a Mike Stern production. Black and white photos flash by, featuring a smiling couple waving beside their garage. Over the image of a house filled with party guests, a yellow title appears, Mid-Century. More images of families in the 60s roll by as credits fade in. Shane West, Sarah Hay, Chelsea Gilligan, Annapurna Sriram, John Park, Vanessa Estelle Williams, Emma Perry, with Mike Stern, featuring Bruce Stern and Stephen Lang. In photos, a group of five sit out on an outdoor patio, a smiling housewife carries out a plate of treats, and a young boy watches TV as a preteen girl sits with her mother. Stands as he works on a canvas. Storm clouds roll through the sky as a woman gleefully holds out her arms. Now, colored clips showcase the inside of a home, furnished in a modern 60s style.
These are the first of the Banner homes, built in the late 50s by architectural icon Frederick Banner. Beautiful on the outside. But step inside, and the picture darkens.
A guy hunches over his laptop, looking at a profile for a brunette woman named Alice. In a doctor's coat, Alice texts, "Your home is beautiful. My husband and I are staying the weekend in Mandarin, so I can work an interview shift at Mandarin County Hospital." A balding doctor sniffs her.
"You smell nice tonight, Alice. Two COVID patients, two cardiac patients. Prepare for a long night. Don't go anywhere."
The doctor taps her nose before sauntering off. A text from Eldridge. "You're going to love it here. I hope you get the position. In a house.
Keep your eyes on clear skies tonight for this lunar event that hasn't been visible for decades. The National Weather Service says that tonight, the Southland will be able to witness a rare lunar eclipse of the Blood Wolf Moon."
"Your place is amazing. You know, Frederick Banner inspired me to study architecture."
"Alice might have mentioned that."
"You never thought about going into medicine, Tom?"
"Oh, he faints at the sight of blood."
"I couldn't stare death square in the face, not like you superheroes."
"So, Tom, you're thinking of relocating your practice?"
"We're still working out the details."
Tom mouths a silent, "Yeah."
"But if I had to be stuck in a house, we could do worse than this. Cheers."
"Cheers."
Later by the front door.
"We're so glad you could stop by. It's not often we get to have docs try out ER call."
"Get a good nap in. Gonna be busy tonight with the full moon."
"Thank you.
Good to see you."
"So good to see you."
"Pleasure."
Alice and Tom head down the front walkway.
"Put yourself in my shoes."
"No, no, they don't look comfortable."
"You insisted I wear them."
"Uh-huh."
"Mm-hmm. Carrie and Hal are sweet, and this job's perfect."
"And the firm's finally taking off. 6 years of work out the window. Beverly Gordon will be thrilled."
The couple pulls up in front of a house in their sleek Tesla. Alice twists her wedding band.
"I know how hard you worked, and you can do that here. I work harder just to be taken seriously."
"Hey, believe me, I want you far, far away from that creep, okay? Maybe this is our opportunity to start a family."
"I trained for a decade, became an expert in the middle of a pandemic, all while getting nasty looks from wrinkled, white, thirsty docs who were more interested in my heels than in what I was saying." So right now, I'm not dropping everything to change diapers.
Can you think about me too, honey?
She gives him a look, leaning back against her headrest. Rolling her eyes, she opens the car door and climbs out. Frowning, Tom reluctantly follows her.
Damn it.
They both gaze at the blue home surrounded by palm trees.
This one here. See? I'm always thinking of you.
You're right. And I'm so sorry. I've just been under a lot of pressure lately.
Pull an all-nighter. I won't be here to bother you.
Okay.
Here.
Their lips meet in a kiss.
Let's go check it out.
Okay.
Taking her hand, Tom strides toward the house. They open a door and approach a glass wall of windows, checking out the vintage interior.
Here?
Yeah. Oh, alarm code *237.
*237.
Yes.
Tom slides open the door, races to a keypad, and types.
*237.
Alice grabs a note out of a vase.
A note. Welcome to your home away from home. This modest dwelling was one of the first built by architect and builder Frederick Banner in 1955. Please make yourself comfortable and enjoy Saturday's eclipse. Call with any questions, Eldridge.
Frederick Banner. This is killer.
After shuffling off this mortal coil, my temple remains Frederick Banner. It's a bit extra.
Frederick Banner.
A bottle of liquor.
Whoa. Dude's temple isn't the only thing that remains. Look at that. Ooh, that's good stuff.
Tom caps the bottle as Alice explores the home. The pair stares at a painting hanging above the bed, featuring a stern-faced man holding a naked woman captive. His painted eyes stare fiercely out.
This is a mood.
Yeah, it is. That's an Emil Larson.
Maybe we put a bedsheet over it.
Their gaze falls back on the painting. The woman hangs limply in the man's arms, her eyes shut. Elsewhere in the house, Tom peers through a doorway, smiling as he walks up to a record player. His eyes scan over a bulletin board filled with old photos, documents, and guides about architecture. A corded phone sits on a desk beside a pipe.
This is where you belong.
Tom spins a globe, spotting a black and white photo of Banner next to an unsmiling brunette woman. Tom studies another photo of just Banner, squinting curiously.
Okay.
He picks up a book written by Banner titled The Cardinal Home. A plain book reads Orontiaco Rex, an alchemical guide to bringing forth the Veiled One. Inside, a drawing shows a group of suited men standing around a bound woman.
Okay.
Alice takes a step outside, glancing around at the small yard. Her mind drifts back to the hospital where she wears a mask and a face shield while listening to a shaking patient's heart. A woman talks on a laptop from her hospital bed.
Hi, my sweet baby. Mommy loves you so much. I'm gonna be home soon, okay?
I just want to see my family. I'll see them again.
Alice somberly shakes her head.
Somewhere else. Do you believe in that?
I don't know, Marlene.
Marlene's eyes stare blankly as Alice jolts awake. Tom crouches beside her.
You mean you didn't hear me?
Mm-mm.
There you go.
Thank you.
He hands her a drink, which she takes gratefully. Leaning back against him, she sets the glass aside and holds his arms close as they wrap around her.
Thank you for this.
Over architecture blueprints, Tom makes another drink.
I don't know. Do you think I could really create something truly iconic?
If we're talking about your bartending skills, then yes.
Yeah. Look, the mid-century was great. I think I just missed my time.
Don't go there with that shit.
No. I'm talking about the style.
Real talk. This reminds me of my Gram's photos from in the day. She would have been redlined right out of this neighborhood, you know? But go ahead and be the man of the house she cleaned. Light up a Pall Mall, sip some bourbon.
Okay, real talk. I did beat it that way.
You can go live in any time. But you can't bring me.
Which is exactly why I'm staying right here, honey.
They snap their gazes to a window.
Came from outside.
Tom marches over, spotting a splotch of blood and black feathers up against the glass. His eyes fall to the ground.
Oh, hell.
Tom shuffles off. Now outside, Alice gazes down at the pavement.
Poor bird. Hand me the shovel.
The shovel?
Yeah.
Skeptical, he hands her the shovel. She holds it over the twitching bird, then slams it down, making it still.
I can't believe you killed that bird.
The window killed it. I just shuffled it off the mortal coil.
See that?
Do you think he's watching us in a lounge chair in the Caribbean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's definitely not Skinny Dip.
They stare up at a security camera and shake their heads. Over a small grave made of a circle of stones and a single flower, Tom and Alice interlock their hands. Later, a shirtless Tom passionately kisses Alice as he leans her back on the couch.
Wait.
What?
Wait. You gonna move here if I get it?
Can it be in a banner home?
Just not this one.
Sold.
Their lips crash together hungrily, and he pins her arm above her head. Switching positions, Tom lies back against the couch, never breaking their kiss. Alice climbs on top and straddles his hips. Cut to black.
I love this place.
I'm glad.
In bed.
I'm glad you're here.
I still can't get over the way you straight up murdered that bird.
Death doesn't faze me. I see it every day. The real struggle is living with people that don't respect me.
Well, I respect you.
I've been there for a lot of people at the end. They just wanted to be seen and to feel safe. Taking this job would make me feel safe.
Well, let's hope they offer it to you.
I'm not saying take the L. Well, maybe this is a fresh start for you, too.
Maybe.
Order food.
Yes, doctor.
It doesn't get old.
I know it doesn't.
Say it again.
Yes, doctor.
Okay.
Alice crawls out of bed as Tom reaches over to the nightstand, grabbing his phone. The sun sets, and a glowing full moon rises in the night sky. In a dim hallway, a painting features a pale woman's face shrouded in darkness. Streaks of muted colors run across the canvas, and Tom studies it. In the bedroom, Alice lies asleep under the covers. Faint light from the glowing pool shines in the otherwise dark room. A man shrouded in shadows stares down at her from the foot of the bed. Meanwhile, in a car parked outside, a guy in a baseball cap takes a hit from a joint. He hunches forward, coughing from the smoke, before taking another hit. He licks his fingers to stub out the flame. Now Tom steps outside to face him.
Hey.
Oh, hey, you're not the regular dude.
No, we're just renting it for the weekend. Hey, so Eldridge is a regular, huh?
Regular? Yeah. Normal? Not so much.
Okay. What's so strange about him?
Just the way he looks at me? I can't put it into words, man. But I'm telling you, bro, like, sleep with one eye open.
Okay, I'll tell him you said hi.
Bon appetit.
The delivery guy staggers off, briefly losing sight of where his car is. Tom narrows his eyes before heading in. Now in the dining room, Tom pours wine beside two plates of rice, veggies, and marinated chicken. Alice wanders down to take a seat beside him.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
You're welcome.
He sips wine as she picks up her chopsticks.
Let's build a fire tomorrow night. Crack open one of Eldridge's bottles and watch this eclipse everyone keeps talking about.
You're really taking his make yourself comfortable seriously.
The full moon hangs in the sky as the delivery guy cruises past a line of houses. His eyes stare out at the road as he drives. The guy stops, leaning over toward the passenger seat. As he does, a figure in a coat appears in front of the windshield. When the guy sits back up, the figure disappears.
Fucking flap.
The delivery guy climbs out, kneeling down to his tire to inspect it. The figure stands motionless as he holds out the pointed end of a compass.
Eldridge?
Eldridge stabs the compass into the delivery guy's chest.
No one can know.
Back at the house, Tom eats noodles.
Will you look around for any places for sale? Is there something you want to say?
Tom slurps the last of his noodle into his mouth as Alice sets down her wine, waiting for a response. Getting nothing, she dabs a napkin against her lips and storms out of the dining room.
Honey.
He sets down his chopsticks. In the bedroom, she folds her clothes.
Oh, come on, you don't have to be at the hospital until 7. Hey. I didn't say no. There's a lot to consider, you know?
Grams used to say, love is showing up and sticking around.
Wearing scrubs, she packs up a duffel bag and slings it over her shoulder. She tries to pass by him.
Hey. Hi.
Show up and stick around.
Alice strides past him, leaving him to stare up at the ceiling with a defeated expression. He strides over to the main door, stepping outside as a pair of headlights pull out of the driveway. His hands rest on his hips as he watches Alice drive away into the night. He presses his lips together in a tight line as he bows his head, lost in his own thoughts. After a moment, he scratches the back of his head and wanders back inside. As he steps away from the main door, a side door creaks open on its own. Tom freezes, staring down the door. Hesitantly, he makes his way closer to it. He glances through the narrow opening before cautiously pushing in. He flips on the lights to the garage and scans the room.
Hello?
He eyes framed posters on the wall, one that reads, "Keep her at your feet," and another that features a woman's head mounted on a slab of wood like a deer head.
Jesus.
Tom wanders away from the wall, making his way around the sleek, blue 60-style car in front of him. He tentatively touches the handle to the driver's side door before pulling it open. He climbs inside and rests his hands on the steering wheel. He checks out the interior before spotting the console beside him. Curiously, he opens it. He reaches inside, revealing an envelope filled with old Polaroids. He studies one of Banner and a brunette woman.
Frederick Banner.
As he flips through more of the photos, a shadowy figure moves behind the car. Tom's eyes remain fixed on the photos as a hand reaches out from the back seat, grabbing toward his neck before slowly retreating. Anthony watches as Tom's shadow approaches the door. At the hospital.
Was San Diego worse than here? I held a lot of hands in their final minutes. But the hard part was our head of trauma. Couldn't keep his hands off me.
Yeah, we've all been there, but honestly not at this job. Will that affect your decision?
Tom would rather me start a family than work.
Hal, too. He's been trying to get me pregnant, but I have lupus.
Alice's face softens sympathetically as she reaches a hand out to Carrie.
Sticking up for yourself in a relationship never feels good.
Yeah. I mean, Hal comes from a dysfunctional family and wants a do-over. And he's convinced himself that we both want the same thing. You have family?
Mine passed. But Tom has family in Arizona.
How's the Banner House? I mean, Hal thought that would, you know, convince Tom.
No, the home rent thing worked out great. It's perfect for Tom. Of course, I'd be more comfortable pretending it's not 1955.
No, I mean, I sure shit don't want to go back. I am way too into my birth control pill.
Back at the house, the full moon shines over the outdoor pool. Inside, Tom pads into the bedroom, furrowing his brows as he crosses the threshold. He tilts his head and makes his way to a book lying open on the floor. A photo of a brunette man rests on the page beside the name Graham Verdon. Tom shuts the book, revealing the title, Forgotten Neighbors: The Gripping Mystery of the Missing Husbands of Mandarin, California.
The Missing Husbands of Mandarin.
Tom considers for a moment before unlocking his phone and searching Frederick Banner. He scrolls through an article about him alongside a black and white photo of the man. Tom lifts his gaze. Now at the dining table, Tom pours a drink while on the phone with a long-haired woman.
I'm leaving any minute now.
Yeah, I figured you'd still be there.
Beverly Gordon has called twice.
Listen. I need a favor.
Are you procrastinating, or did you miss me?
If I tell you I missed you, will you do me the favor? I need you to look for a book with the orange binding.
You're procrastinating. Why can't we just Wikipedia him like normal people?
I did. A lot was missing.
Beverly Gordon is going to kill you if you don't finish her plans. The Strange Life of Frederick Banner.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. That's it. Now, I remember there being a lot of photos of Banner in his home.
There are a lot of photos in front of houses.
Okay. Well, look for a photo of him standing in front of an old Ford Thunderbird.
Tom lounges at a desk with his feet propped up.
This is probably it.
What's the address of the house?
1960 Marion Lane.
I knew it. I'm in his actual house.
What's it like?
Well, it's like stepping back in time. Only smaller than I thought, but lived in.
Probably died in, too.
Flip to the table of contents. I remember reading years ago that Banner was obsessed with the occult.
You don't pay me enough to read the whole goddamn book on a Friday night.
Hannah, just find the chapter and what was so strange about the dude.
Okay, his wife, Alice, disappeared under mysterious circumstances in 1958.
Her name was Alice?
Looks like it. Rumors he was a polygamist. He was technically married twice. Second time to a Joanne Waxton Banner until his death in 83.
How did Banner die?
At home. His wife died from a heart attack a month later in the same house. His young son went into foster care. Chunk of this is about Emil Larson and his influence on Banner. Well, Larson looks super sketch.
You should see his paintings.
Contemporaries said Larson and Banner started a secret society, the Brotherhood of the Orange King. Blah, 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 some garbage called human transmutation to bring forth an immortal being. Look, these guys were obviously bananas. Can I go now?
No, send me all the photographs in that book of Banner with women, okay?
Ugh, I'm missing happy hour.
Well, in a few minutes, you can bounce.
How's it going? You kill Alice yet?
I think they're gonna offer her the job.
So, what does that mean for us?
Well, I guess I have to consider becoming a Mandarin County housewife. Want to change the scenery?
I thought things weren't going well between you two.
Sometimes you have to make sacrifices.
Sounds like you're done with me. Finish the Gordon project.
Tom's gaze flicks to the floor-to-ceiling window as he stares out into the night. A painting nearby features Banner sitting poolside as a woman stands in the waist-deep water. Lying on a couch with the envelope of photographs scattered beside him, Tom studies the photo of Banner and his wife, Alice.
Multiple wives, multiple lives.
He glances at a photo of a young boy, then one of a suited man with a short, scruffy beard.
Eldridge.
He knits his brows at another photo featuring Joanne and Banner. He stands up beside the dark painting of a pale woman.
Marie Verdun.
He holds the photograph up beside the painting. Later, he sits at the dining table with his architecture blueprint. Setting his ruler aside, Tom picks up a glass and takes a sip from his drink. As he sets it back down atop the blueprint, a reflection of a woman appears on the table. At the hospital.
Prep Bay 5, grab 2 units O negative.
Patient found in vehicle with multiple stab wounds to the neck and abdomen.
Total blood loss?
There are 2 liters left on the floor of the ambulance.
Let's move.
In an OR, Alice and Carrie dab at the blood on their patient's chest.
He's lost too much blood.
The dose hit. No one. No.
They carefully slide the oxygen mask back on the delivery guy's face. His eyes stare up vacantly at the ceiling, and the doctor's hands pull away. Meanwhile, Tom wanders outside, shutting the sliding door behind him. He pads over to a circular poolside chair, standing beside it as he gazes at the water. Daytime, with Hannah and a client.
Oh, a seamless integration of indoor and outdoor space. I see you were inspired by Frederick Banner.
That's right, Miss Gordon. Banner homes are built for entertaining.
Well, I'm looking for something that lasts for more than just a handful of parties. It's something that will last for decades. An iconic home that generations from now will stand out as a true achievement. Mr. Levin, I motivate people for a living. Clearly you knew what you were getting into.
I appreciate your patience, ma'am. Maybe I'm just the wrong guy for the job.
Don't give me that. Now, you haven't lived until you've created something that will last.
Miss Gordon, we would be more than happy to reassess the property.
Were you really under the impression I was spending $10 million to have a place to stuff my furniture? Look at your initial proposal and read the Warhol quote you included. The idea isn't to live forever, but to create something that will. You feel me?
Back in the present, Tom strolls toward the house, taking another sip of his drink. He freezes, catching sight of the floor-to-ceiling windows. The woman with red hair shuffles into the house. Slowly, she turns back toward Tom, locking eyes with him. Standing in the middle of the living room, the woman's body disappears.
Oh, I must be losing my shit.
Tom makes his way back into the dining room, only to find the liquor bottle on its side, its contents spilled across his blueprint.
Oh, what the fuck?
The stain seeps into the white paper as Tom bows his head. In the OR, Alice takes off her glasses and slips off her gloves. She glances at her patient, somberly shaking her head. Her eyes catch a receipt sticking out of the delivery guy's pocket. She picks up the Love Garden receipt, noticing the name Tom Levin printed at the top. She quickly leaves with the receipt. Now Tom sits at the desk on the phone.
Hi, this is Dr. Alice Dodgson. If this is a medical emergency, please hang up and dial 911.
Changing his mind, Tom hangs up and takes another swig of liquor. Elsewhere, Hannah answers her phone on the street.
I'm gone, headed to the gas lamp.
Look, I just wanted to apologize. You sounded mad.
So this is just a job for me?
Hannah, I think we have a great working relationship. And so what I'm trying to say...
Think about someone besides yourself for once.
A shadow passes behind the windows.
I think I saw someone in this house.
I've got two martinis waiting.
Hannah gets into her car, hanging up on Tom. Annoyed, he glances over at his reflection in the window. As Hannah texts in her car, an officer taps on her glass with a small flashlight. She forces a smile and rolls down her window.
I noticed your tire's low.
I know that it's low. Thanks.
He leans in closer to her.
No one can know.
Excuse me?
He thrusts his hand into the car, grabbing Hannah's neck. She flails and struggles against his chokehold. He pulls her head out the window. At the Banner House, Tom swims in the pool, a glass of liquor resting on the surrounding pavement. He wades over to the glass as he skeptically eyes his surroundings. In the house, Tom's phone rests on the desk with an incoming call from Alice. She texts at a lunch table. First patient was stabbed to death. He had our takeout order in his pocket. Need to notify cops. Call me. Be careful.
Alice, Carrie told me about that patient. I'm so sorry.
Thanks. Hasn't been an easy night, but I've seen worse.
Yeah, me too. Look, I hope you consider staying with us. Could really use you around here.
Thanks, Hal.
Hal rests a hand on her shoulder, letting it linger there as he smiles down at Alice. Eyeing his hand, she smiles uncomfortably.
You'll excuse me.
Alice takes her leave as Hal watches her go, his hands tapping against his coffee cup. At the house, Tom swims underwater. As he resurfaces, the red-headed woman is there in the pool waiting for him. He smooths back his hair and stares at her.
Do you live here?
I used to. I've been waiting for someone like you.
She swims over, closing the distance between them. With her arms wrapped around his neck, she kisses him tenderly. Slowly, the pair sinks underwater, their lips never parting. She caresses his cheek as her bare chest presses against his. Her kisses become frantic as Tom's eyes shoot open. In the hospital's morgue, a coroner uncovers the delivery guy's body.
There are multiple stab wounds to the abdomen.
Knife?
No. Puncture wounds. By two fine points.
We talking vampires, Doc?
Not a thirsty one. He was covered in blood.
Is there any ink in the wounds?
Let's wait for the labs.
Looks like a painful way to go.
All right, thank you so much.
Alice nods, her eyes falling back to the body as the officers head out.
Oh.
Tom finds himself laid out by the edge of the pool. He pushes himself to his feet as he winces slightly. He knits his brows, confusion clouding his expression. Tom pads along the side of the house, slowing to a stop as he peers through the glass. He leans in and listens to the music playing inside. He picks up the nearby shovel and heads in. Keeping his back against the wall, Tom slides the door shut. He readies the shovel in his hands as he presses on through the house. A crack through a partially open door shows the light in the empty office. He gives a quick glance in both directions before pushing into the office. Still clutching the shovel, he peers behind himself and lifts the needle off the record. The dark painting of the pale woman stares out pointedly. Having changed back into a t-shirt and pants, Tom strolls out of the bathroom and through the house. He stops, staring at his reflection. Searching, he makes his way down the hall, then startles at the sight of the red-headed woman.
Jesus.
I've been waiting for someone like you.
A deep gash runs across the base of her neck. Her eyes remain fixed on Tom's as her body disappears into thin air. He stares around in shock, completely at a loss. The orange book from earlier rests on the floor. Tom sits beside it, flipping through its pages.
Laurentico Rex by Emil Larson.
In a dim room, the white-haired Emil Larson sits in a chair.
The mid-century modern home is built so that no one ever can see beyond the walls.
Tom sits on the floor, poring over the contents of the book. His fingers run across a section of ripped-out pages, and his brows furrow in thought. He stands, book in hand. As night still hangs throughout the city, Tom peers out through one of the windows to find the red-headed woman holding a shovel.
You want me to dig a hole?
She eyes him as he takes the shovel and peers into a hole. He reaches down to touch a bone, which flashes him back to 1973. Banner chokes a man on his knees. The guy grips onto Banner's arm.
Richard!
Banner pulls a rope taut, draining the last bit of life force left in the man. The man stills, his head drooping forward. With a cold shove, Banner pushes the corpse down, watching as he flops onto his side. In the hole, Tom quickly drops the bone. He finds a dirty wallet and flips through its contents curiously. Hearing the whisper, Tom bolts upright before glancing down at his hands. He strides through the home to a yellow corded phone on the desk. Frowning, he reaches forward and turns the phone's rotary numbers.
Hi. I don't know if it's an emergency, but I really would like to talk to someone.
What's the nature of your emergency?
I think I found some human remains. Hello? Hello?
At the hospital.
His last words were, "Dude said no one could know."
Do you think the dude he was referring to is your husband?
I don't think so. It was probably just a coincidence.
We don't believe in coincidences.
Tell us about your husband, ma'am.
Doctor.
The male cop gives the female one a look.
He's an architect. We've been married 3 years.
Is your husband a violent man?
No.
You two getting along okay?
Mm-hmm. Will you check in on Tom? I'm kind of worried about him.
You bet.
Raquel Dorado hands over her card.
If you have any concerns, don't hesitate to call.
Thank you.
Raquel flips her notebook shut, glances over at her partner, and makes her way out. Taking a moment to breathe, Alice picks up the card.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Anthony hangs by a belt as Joanne pounds on a window. In bed, Tom jolts awake. He throws his legs over the side of the bed and presses his palm against his forehead. He stares down at the floor beside the dresser, finding a discarded belt. As he leans down to pick it up, a figure strolls behind him. He checks behind himself, finding nothing. Tom wanders back to the window, where the red-headed woman waits with the shovel. He slides open the door for her.
This asshole's never given our cleaning deposit back.
In the yard, Tom forces the shovel into the ground. He leans down, reaching toward a skull lying amidst the dirt. In the house in 1979...
Let's see who can get a taller one.
A young boy peeks out, smiling at the red-haired woman as Banner arrives.
Hey, buckaroo. Look, you're finally wearing the dress, and it looks quite lovely on you.
Banner presses his lips against hers. She remains still, not pulling away, but not kissing him back either.
I'll be staying for dinner. Did you get the chops I sent over?
She nods.
You know, I bought that dress for my Alice more than 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Banner crouches back down to the young boy who plays with blocks.
Hey. Oh, I got your nose.
Have you been a good boy this week?
The woman silently trudges into the kitchen. She chops skinned potatoes, then pulls another knife out of the block as Banner saunters in.
What about you, Marie? Have you been a good girl?
Considering the circumstances.
Such as this house, which I bought and paid for. The groceries, the diapers that are delivered to you 7 days a week. You might want to be a little careful. I'll get the impression that you're not very grateful. Please try not to overcook the chops. Otherwise, I'm going to have to dine at Joanne's. I hope you're not jealous of her. You know, Joanne, she's not very good at keeping a clean house or keeping secrets. If I were you, I wouldn't be sharing anything with her that, well, unless you want the whole neighborhood to know about it.
I didn't say anything to her.
If you truly believe what Joanne says you believe, well, you really should notify the authorities. You look like you've seen a ghost.
Marie grabs for a knife, but Banner stops her.
Why did you do that? Everything was perfect. Just like I imagined. My orange queen.
He moves the knife toward her neck.
Please.
Her lip trembles as he looks her over, contemplating.
I'm afraid we're gonna spoil this dress. I took Graham. Now I'm taking Eldridge.
He slides the knife across her throat, watching as her body slowly collapses in front of him. He lets his hand fall from her face as blood oozes from her neck. Marie convulses on the ground, grabbing at her neck as blood drips from her mouth. She reaches out desperately. Banner casually cleans off the knife and slides it back into the block. A young Eldridge sits in the doorway, staring at his mother's limp, bloody hand. Banner steps over her body.
Mommy's sleeping.
Back in the hole, Tom lets the skull drop from his hands. In the bathroom, he hunches over the toilet and vomits. Collecting himself, Tom walks back out, gripping the handle of the shovel. He sneaks his way back into the office and carefully slides open an interior door. He studies security footage where a guy sprays off the poolside patio.
Eldridge? You never left.
Tom narrows his eyes, creeping backwards toward the desk. He crouches down beside the corded phone there and makes a call. Eldridge wanders back inside. Trying desperately to remain silent, Tom carefully balances the phone on top of its base. Eldridge marches toward the office just as Tom sneaks to the other side of the sliding door. Eldridge slows his stride, glancing around suspiciously as he enters the office. He pushes open the sliding door, peering out as Tom presses himself against a wall. Eldridge grabs a cola bottle, takes a swig, and sets it back on a shelf before shutting the door. He marches off through the house, and Tom pops out from the closet. Later, Tom creeps through the house with his shovel at the ready. He slips out the back door and wanders around the outside of the house. Tom trips into a hole. Eldridge backs up to where the keypad is and quickly shuts it off. In the massive hole deep into the ground, Tom's body lies on his back at the bottom. In their cruiser, Raquel sits with her partner.
Car 22, we have reports of a 911 call from 1960 Marion Lane.
Copy that, on our way. Down the road from our 419. I hate coincidences.
Tom lies motionless in the bottom of the hole as Eldridge holds up a knife inside. His head whips to the door. He spots the two officers standing outside on his security cameras.
Oh, fuck.
He picks up the carefully balanced phone receiver off its base before slamming it back down. Now he opens the door.
Evening, sir. I'm Sergeant Cho. We received a 911 call from this address.
You know, I think I accidentally knocked the phone off the hook. I probably auto-dialed you.
What's your name, sir?
Eldridge Banner.
Oh, hey, Mr. Banner, we didn't realize you lived here.
Do you rent this home on home rents?
You know, the manner of police just keep getting prettier.
Well, Mr. Banner, there seems to have been a big mix-up.
We were told there was a Tom Levin at this address.
I think you were mistaken.
Did you order any takeout tonight?
No, I cook. Tonight was, grass-fed liver with broad beans paired with an 09 Amarone. It was truly exquisite.
In the hole, Tom's eyes flutter open.
That sounds delicious. Got me hungry.
Are you sure there's no one else in here?
No, sweetie. Not a soul.
Would you mind if we come in and take a look around?
That won't be necessary. We're really sorry to trouble you, Mr. Banner. We'll be on our way.
No problem at all, officers. I'll see you at the next fundraiser.
Yeah.
All right. Have a safe night.
Eldridge presses his hand against Raquel's butt as they turn away. Meanwhile, Tom struggles up to his feet.
Where the hell did this hole come from?
Dude, what the hell was that?
He wrote a $10 million check to bail out the department. Dude holds a lot of weight around here.
We have a witness and a delivery slip that places our Vic at this house.
What if Dodgson faked the receipts?
Or Banner's lying.
Come on. Williams and Cryer can follow up with the restaurant owner.
Yo, hold on a sec. What?
While her partner hops back in the cruiser, Raquel wanders over to the backyard.
What's going on?
Tom glances up from the hole at the flashing red and blue lights. In a nearby bush, Raquel points her flashlight through. Tom opens his mouth to scream.
Come on, if we hurry, we can get some fried chicken wrap tacos before the drive-in closes.
Fucking moron.
Raquel retreats, but not before spotting the security camera mounted in the corner of the entryway.
Don't even think about it.
Her partner shakes his head as Raquel joins him in the passenger seat.
I want to see the footage from earlier.
You can run that by Chief Grady.
Are we going to serve and protect or what?
The only thing I want served is a greasy fried taco. Come on, let's go.
Eldridge watches on his security feed as the cruiser pulls out of the driveway. He nods to himself with a frown firmly in place. At the hospital, Alice leans against the wall as she makes a call.
Please leave your
Hey, I'm worried. Just let me know you're okay.
She hangs up, glancing down the hall. In the hole, Tom slides down, both of his arms completely covered in dirt. He picks up another bone, sparking a flashback.
Ah, shit.
In 1966, a guy smokes out by the pool as Banner saunters over to him. The guy turns around and Banner socks him in the face. The man stumbles back into the pool, splashing down before floating motionless in the rippling water. Banner picks up the man's cigarette, takes a long drag, and puffs out small smoke rings. In the hole, a hand reaches down. Tom takes it, letting it pull him up. He sits beside Marie.
I saw him kill you. I felt it like I was you.
Welcomed us to the neighborhood with a smile. And then one by one, they took our husbands away. He's still here. Plotting his return.
Return? Come on, the dude's dead.
That won't stop him. He's stuck in the house he died in. Help me put an end to him.
I think I'm just gonna call an Uber. Introduce your son's face to this shovel.
Hidden in the shadows, Tom holds the shovel to his chest as Eldridge casually strolls through his dining room. He stands before a mirror as Banner appears behind him.
I designed you. I built you. You have a purpose.
I have a purpose.
Tom sneaks into the kitchen, carefully shutting the door behind him. He proceeds further in as Eldridge gives his reflection a smile. Tom spots him taking a swig as he marches off.
Keep drinking, fuckface.
Still covered in dirt, Tom watches Eldridge disappear down the hall. Once he's out of sight, Tom makes his way past the office, around the corner, and over to the living room. He keeps his shovel upright, ready for an attack. Tom quickly moves out of sight as Eldridge slides open a door. He breezes through his home, watching out for the handle on a second sliding door. He takes that path toward the front door, but instead opens the neighboring garage door. Meanwhile, Tom turns the knob on a wooden door. He pushes into a vintage bedroom lined with floral wallpaper. His eyes scan the room, taking it in before setting down his shovel. Beside an old-school projector, Tom slides open a cabinet compartment. He sits on the edge of the bed and yanks open a bedside drawer. Inside, he finds the missing pages from the book. Drawings on the pages show a woman inside a circle, a dagger, and a sleeping woman lying on a stone slab. Tom skims through them. He checks over his shoulder before rising to his feet. With his shoulders rolled back and face determined, Tom marches around the bed. His eyes glare ahead as he pushes open another door. He curiously steps closer, pushing aside a set of curtains to reveal blood dripping down a hanging pair of feet. The body hangs in the shower by a belt, fresh shower water still dripping across his chest. Tom reaches out and tilts the man's head up. It's Tom. Tom staggers back into the wallpapered room, staring in complete shock. He bolts off. Daytime. With a splattering of blood across the chest of his shirt, Eldridge stands beside the hole and texts on Tom's phone. "Sorry, but I need some space. We'll call you later." Eldridge chucks the phone and Tom's wallet into the hole, where Tom's body still lies motionless. Eldridge shovels dirt in as a view of the patio reveals a smearing of blood leading from the pavement to the grass. Now in fresh clothes, Eldridge starts up his car and backs out of the driveway. At the hospital, Alice makes her way out. Carrie looks up from her chart as she passes by.
"Alice, hey, I just submitted your recommendation."
Alice presses her lips together, struggling for what to say. She nods with a polite smile.
"Oh, thank God. Oh, I so need this."
"I know."
Carrie comes out from behind her desk to wrap her in a hug. Now, Alice returns to the Banner House in her Tesla. She parks the car in the driveway, leaning her head back against the headrest in exhaustion. Inside,
"Tom?"
She wanders through the space, searching. She puts her hands on her hips as she continues further in.
"Tom!"
A twinge of worry darkens her expression as Alice picks up the pace. She glances up and down every hall, spotting nobody.
"Tom?"
She taps her fingers against the wall, gazing out at the circular chairs on the patio. Reluctantly, she turns away. Now she leaves another voicemail.
"Hey, it's me. Had a tough night. I need you to try and understand what it's like to be me. How tough this move is for me, too. And if you leave after I've asked you to show up and stick around, it just tells me you're not invested in us."
Tears well in her eyes as she lowers the phone from her ear. She shifts, fighting back the emotion as best she can. As her gaze drifts out toward the floor-to-ceiling windows, Tom spots her from the other side. He stares down at his hands, then presses them against the glass. Desperate for her attention, he calls her name again and again. His expression grows in intensity each time he yells for her, but nothing comes out. His face falls. Tom watches from afar as Alice soaks in the pool. Her gaze stares ahead as Tom's hand stretches toward her hair. His fingers shake as he draws near, but merely grazes the side of it. Marie watches nearby as the sun beats down on her.
"She's not safe here."
"Can you warn her?"
"She doesn't believe in a hereafter."
"I don't remember."
"He drowned you."
Tom stands, walking away from Alice as Marie holds out her hand.
"Show me how to stop him."
He takes it. In the morgue, the coroner lines up the puncture wounds with the compass.
"Nice police work."
Raquel nods with a small smile. She checks her phone as the coroner sets the compass on a surgical tray. On the phone.
"Hey, Manny, I think I found the murder weapon. It's an architectural bow compass.
What the hell's that?
It's a metallic instrument, dual-pointed. Architects use it.
So Levin or Banner?
Banner.
You got a motive?
I'm working on it.
Raquel.
Both of her salaries are pretty much covered by Eldridge Banner. Call Chief Gray before you do anything stupid.
Okay.
Raquel sinks, hanging up the phone. Out by the pool, Tom tries to move a piece on a chessboard as Alice stares off.
Forget about your hand. It's not really there. Know you're moving the piece before you even try. You have to focus. It's hard. Our minds are... What's left of them are always hazy.
Maybe I'm just a checker scat.
My husband and I never finished this game.
It must have been hard watching Eldridge turn into his father.
Drove me mad. I didn't have the strength to stop him.
No, but you had the guts to grab that knife and try. You tried to be a good mother.
What was your mother like?
She had a great laugh. Mountain of curly black hair. When I was 7, we went for a car ride. No seatbelts. I stumbled out of the car and she was laying there in a sea of broken glass. I was scared a lot growing up. Feelings were something that real men ignored.
Feelings are all that's left of us.
He makes the piece move without touching it.
Not exactly.
At the station, Raquel works at her desk, studiously writing notes and typing at her computer. She answers a call.
Officer Raquel Dorado.
Hi, officer. This is Alice Dodgson. Did you and your partner speak with my husband last night?
Your husband wasn't at the address you provided. The owner was.
What?
Eldridge Banner? He said he'd never heard of a Tom Levin.
You sure you had the right house?
1960 Marion Lane.
Eldridge was in this house last night.
He was. I saw him myself.
Officer, I have a bad feeling my husband didn't just leave. Can you come here now, please?
Yes, of course. I'm on my way.
Marie flips on the projector.
This is how we can warn her.
Archival footage shows Banner smoking alongside Emil Larson.
If I may.
Be my guest.
The purpose of architecture, the purpose of architecture is that after one has moved on from this plane, one has created something that will live forever.
This is true. You've gotten more professorial in your age. You have a tendency to be good at lecturing. I knew what you were saying. However, what if I were to tell you you're looking at it all backward? My blueprints, I insisted that you used for a reason far greater and consequential than maximizing the square footage of a home. Years ago, I came upon a grimoire, and it told about the ancient wraith of the Blood Deed.
During a rare blood wolf moon, it's possible to impregnate a woman with an inhabitant of the underground. The spirit is able to escape death and gets reborn. Requisite is a proper architectural space. A man and a woman. The vessel is the woman.
Tom takes that in, bowing his head. In the kitchen, Alice draws a knife from the knife block before slowly making her way around the counter. She peers down a hallway behind her but continues forward. She holds the knife in front of herself defensively. A fresh wave of concern washes over her as she nears the door. A hand jiggles a locked doorknob and the garage door flips open. Wearing only an oversized t-shirt and panties, Alice marches back into the kitchen, setting down her knife.
Tom?
It's Eldridge.
Oh. Hello. Oh. I must have gotten the days mixed up.
We have it booked till tomorrow. Were you here last night?
You must be Alice. I'm Eldridge, the owner.
Why are you here? My husband will be here any second.
He grabs her throat.
I doubt that. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful women.
He twists the knife out of her hand, but she headbutts him. She dashes off, shutting a door behind her.
Alice!
She sneaks away from the door to the bedroom and pulls open the sliding glass door. Eldridge rubs his head before following after her. Alice pulls open the gate and sprints into the street.
Please! Somebody help!
She hurries into a neighboring driveway, waving her arms. A truck whizzes past her.
Please! Oh, please!
It doesn't stop. Alice's eyes grow panicked as she scans the area, looking for an escape. Suddenly, a hand comes up around her and grabs her mouth. Eldridge stabs a needle into her neck and injects it. Alice's body goes limp as the view fades to black. Now she lies atop a freshly made bed, wearing only a white nightgown. Eldridge slowly removes his jacket. Tom yells through the window and Eldridge's body gets thrown back. A vase flies across the room and shatters, just shy of Eldridge. He sprints into the wallpapered room, eyes darting. A mass beneath the sheets grows as it moves.
She took you over.
Don't blame me!
A book flies across the room and knocks Eldridge in the head. Later, Tom wanders over to the security monitor, rewinding footage from the pool.
You blacked out by the pool, and I fell into you. I didn't even know that I could.
Who are you?
Ellie.
Eldridge wearily eyes Tom, who stands in front of him.
I'm your mother.
Bullshit.
Your father murdered me.
She left him. That's how we knew women could be trusted.
No, he trusted the nanny and maids to raise you.
My nanny was a mother to me.
Your nanny was a prisoner. She knew he slit my throat in front of you.
You're not her.
I possessed this body. And I didn't mean to. But I'm here, and I beg of you to please put down that knife.
Whoever you are, if you die in another body, you'll plummet into an abyss of excruciating madness.
I've already had a lifetime of that. Ellie, don't be like him. You're not like him.
I'm just like him. He was a great man. He's going to be great again.
Eldridge lunges forward with a knife, but Tom grabs it, holding him back. The two struggle against one another, but Eldridge forces Tom into the pool. Marie watches from afar as Eldridge holds him underwater. Now Tom watches his body go limp in the security footage.
I was trying to stop him.
I can't believe you.
It was a mistake.
What the hell was your plan?
I put on your clothes. I wanted to stop him. To try to save you two from being here forever. I left your body right before he drowned you. I'm so sorry.
Tom takes a step toward Marie, not breaking eye contact.
Help me finish what you started.
In the wallpapered bedroom, Eldridge lies unconscious on the bed. Tom sits next to him, nervously folding his hands in his lap. Leaning back, he takes Eldridge's hand and wraps his own around it.
I think as long as he's unconscious, you can possess him.
I guess it's my turn to drive.
Taking a short breath, Tom falls back onto the bed. When he sits up, he's in Eldridge's body. He turns to Marie, who smiles. She watches as he gets up from the bed and strides off. In bed, Alice lies asleep on her side. Tom rests a blanket over her bare shoulders.
Tom?
I'm here, honey.
She rests her hand on top of his.
I'm so worried about you. You drugged me.
I'm taking care of him. Just rest, okay?
Where's your ring?
Don't worry.
Behind her sleeping form, Tom sits up in Eldridge's body. He stares at her adoringly. Outside, a white sedan pulls up in their driveway. Raquel puts the car in park and climbs out. Eyes determined, she marches toward the door but stops partway there. She glances back at her car, hesitating. In the backyard, Tom in Eldridge's body shovels away the dirt from the newly covered hole. Marie watches him work, her eyes soft and appreciative. Raquel wanders in through an open gate. Inside the house, she makes her way into the bedroom where Alice lies asleep. She approaches her, wide-eyed.
Doctor, are you okay? Are you hurt?
Eldridge.
Raquel turns back toward the door, gripping her holstered gun. She holds it out in front of herself as she tentatively makes her way down the hall. Outside, Tom continues to use Eldridge's body to redig the hole. Marie slumps on her hand, losing interest in the process. From behind, Raquel aims her gun at him.
Drop the shovel and put your hands on your head. Put your hands on your head.
Let me handle this.
He complies and Raquel handcuffs him.
So who's pretty now?
Have we met?
I'm the cop you said was pretty.
Look, I'm not who you think I am.
I think you're a piece of shit, burying some dude in your backyard. Get on your knees.
Well, you're not entirely off. Technically, I'm unburying him.
Is that Tom Levin?
Sort of. Look, I'm doing this to show you what he's... what I've done.
You expecting someone?
Raquel opens the front door, revealing a graying man in a suit.
Chief, I found him burying a corpse in the backyard.
The chief saunters in, eyeing Tom.
This true?
Arrest me. Take care of Alice.
You don't want to hurt her? You care about her?
Where's Dr. Dodson?
She's in the bedroom. She was tranquilized. But she's stable and she's semi-conscious.
You've got some explaining to do.
Now the three of them stand over the hole.
It's Tom Levin. Banner was throwing dirt on him when I arrived.
My father committed multiple murders. This whole property's a graveyard.
Get on your knees.
Sir,
on your knees, I said.
What are you doing?
It's okay, Dorado. This... I want to know what in the hell is going on.
The chief aims his gun up at Raquel.
Chief! What the...
He shoots her.
Now tell me. Why you don't recognize your goddamn brother. So much trouble to cover our tracks. Took care of anyone. Knew you were here. Yet somehow, you got the upper hand, Mr. Levin.
You learn quickly, Mr. Levin.
Utilizing the space inside our creations is the hallmark of a great architect.
The chief's eyes suddenly glow a warm brown. He chucks the gun, and Tom finds himself getting choked by Banner.
My floor. You are no longer of the world. She is mine to claim. Despite my instructions to find a fiery-haired vixen, Eldridge chose your Alice as my vessel. Women were put here to tempt us, to vex us. The true work of man is to shut Pandora back in her box. Some things like you, Mr. Levin, were not built to last.
Marie starts toward the fallen Tom.
My God. How many years has it been?
He grabs her by the neck.
You've been watching the whole time. Scheme.
Muck up my plans.
You don't have power over me anymore. You already took everything.
No, it was you that took from me, you ungrateful trollop. Oh. You never loved me.
See you in hell.
You'll have to wait another lifetime, dear. I plan to stay a while.
Marie and Tom's bodies turn gray. In a dark space, Marie surges up out of the water, screaming as she arches her back.
Tom!
Shoulders and breasts peek out of the pitch black water.
Tom! Where are you?
A bearded man grips his head as he lets out a scream. Tom surfaces.
Tom!
He shakes his head and refracted images call out. He stares ahead, taking slow steps forward. A lost woman's eyes grow wide.
What is this place? Where are you?
He tried to see. Can you find me?
Now the orange moon hangs in the sky as candles burn.
Et luna in sanguinem autumn. Et luna in sanguinem Autumn. Et luna in sanguinem autumn. Et luna in sanguinem autumn.
Alice lies on a table in the center of the room, her eyes briefly fluttering open. Four men in black with silver masks circle her as they chant. Banner beams, a figure present by candlelight.
We have reached the equinox of the Blood Wolf Moon. The time to conjure our father back into this world.
In the dark abyss, a face screams as it surfaces. Tom reaches out a hand. Through a wavering wall, Marie and Tom's hands connect. The two huddle close together as the darkness envelops them. Now they both emerge from the pool.
How did we escape?
Same as Frederick. My eavesdropping finally paid off. She'll be unconscious. Possess her and you can catch them off guard.
She didn't train 10 years just to change his diapers.
The men take off their masks, revealing the police officer, the chief, Eldridge, and Hal. The four of them each gaze down at Alice, sly smirks playing on their lips.
But our brother Eldridge received the wandering ghost, wraith of the blood deed. Our father who has been with us from seed to soul.
Let us imbibe the blood of our vessel's lover.
Eldridge slowly approaches Alice and takes her hand. Using the compass, he slices open her wrist and drains her blood into a glass. Her hand quivers, startling the men.
No. Stop.
I wouldn't want to sleep through this either. She's about to become part of history.
Dark clouds pass by the glowing orange moon in the sky.
Consecrate her to our Orange King.
Eldridge takes the cup of blood and throws it back, wincing at the taste. As he swallows, his body slouches forward. The other men support him. His body straightens, his eyes now an eerie white. Eldridge smiles at his fellow companions.
My boys, let us summon my perfection back into the world of matter. Behind these walls, surrounded by looking glass, we do as we wish.
Tom and Marie come up to the glass, gazing in at Alice's unconscious state. A hand rests on Alice's neck.
She's awake.
She grips at the hand, which chokes her. Tom watches in horror.
Don't.
She needs to be unconscious.
The hand relaxes as her body goes still. Eldridge, possessed by Banner, nods to the others.
Blood and honor. We do as we wish.
Marie stands by Tom's side, gently letting go of the hand on his shoulder. He shuts his eyes, fading out completely. Alice's eyes open, and the compass slides up to her hand. She bolts upright.
Father! Father! Stop!
Surging forward, she stabs Eldridge repeatedly with the compass. As the men try to throw her off, she leans over and stabs the officer in the crotch. She smashes a glass against Hal before wrestling the chief down. Candles fall and the flames burn the man's face.
She can do it. You've ruined everything.
Marie takes off her heel and tosses it to Alice, who jabs Hal in the leg, then sticks the heel right in his eye. His head flops onto the ground.
don't you try and hothead over there?
Tom nods, and the chief's eyes open, half of his face now burnt. The officer pulls the compass out of his bleeding crotch as Alice brings a nervous hand to her lips. Under Tom's control, the man picks up a large candle holder and slams it down on the officer. Eldridge smacks Alice through a table. On the floor, Alice rolls over, shards of glass cutting through her abdomen. She winces, and a large crimson stain marks her white nightgown. Her lips tremble as her eyes squeeze shut. She reaches down to apply pressure on her wound. Eldridge climbs between her legs, gripping onto her side.
Why are you struggling? Through the ages, you've been good for only one thing.
The thing I need to give me more time.
She tugs a glass shard out from her wound and rams it into the side of Eldridge's head. His face transforms into Banner as he bleeds out.
Your time's up, motherfucker!
His face darkens to ash before crumbling to dust. She lies back, her body relaxing as the darkness of sleep overtakes her.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
Alice stirs awake with Tom sitting by her side. She turns her head, knitting her brows at him.
Tom? Yeah? What happened to you?
Don't worry about me. Hope is on the way.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Pressure's falling.
No, hey. You're not dying tonight.
He holds a glass of water to her lips. She sits up slightly and drinks.
Ooh.
Okay.
He gently wipes away the excess water as she squirms on the ground.
I'm sorry, I wasn't here for you when I should have been. I could have listened to you more. I could have put myself in your shoes.
You would have hated those shoes.
With their fingers interlaced, Tom holds her hand.
I'm glad you're holding my hand.
You're holding mine.
I don't want to live in a Banner house.
No. Absolutely not. Maybe a Paul Williams, if it's on the market. If you're looking for modern names. But not a troubled architect. Okay. It's gonna be okay. I love you.
She leans up to meet his lips in a tender kiss. Reluctantly, he pulls away and rests his forehead against hers. She lies on the ground, with Tom no longer there. A body bag zips up as blue and red lights flash outside the home. On a stretcher, EMTs wheel Alice out of the house toward an ambulance.
What a shit show.
What are my vitals?
Hey, you're gonna be okay.
Get me to the hospital, please.
They roll her into the ambo and shut the doors behind her. Nearby, Raquel's partner shakes his head. From the driveway, Marie and Tom watch as the ambulance drives away. Sweat drips down Alice's forehead as she opens her eyes. Tom tries to cross the end of the driveway, but an invisible barrier stops him in his tracks. Marie slowly steps up beside him. Anthony stares out a window across the street.
The truth was staring at me through the glass, but I didn't see it.
Through each of the windows, a lost soul stares out at Tom. A woman with dark hair gives a sad smile before fading away.
Love is showing up and sticking around.
Marie takes Tom's hand. Text appears over black. An Astral Plane production. In association with Gaudioso Twins Films, Green Step Productions, Future Proof Films, and Mojo Global Arts. Credits: Sonia O'Hara, Ellen Toland, James Gaudioso, Jay Scully, Michael Pollock, Craig Blair, Melissa Bale, Bill Chott, Daniel V. Graulau, Jay Harden, Vince Jordan, Wyatt James Clark, Sebastian Quinn, Preston Bebas, Johnny Oberg Jr., Ann James, Sean Parker, Rochelle Royale. Casting by Kirstie Lugo, Kendra Shea Clark CSA, and Helen Geyer CSA. Edited by Stephanie Filo ACE, Director of Photography Antonio Cisneros. Original music by Vivek Madala. Production designer Zach Bangma. Sound design by John Warren, CAS MPSE. D. Chris Smith. This is where you belong. Visual effects supervisor Charles Doolin. Stunt coordinators Eddie Perez and Hugh Aod O'Brien. Executive producers Shane West, Stephen Lang. Co-producers DJ Dodd and C.I. Nwodum. Oh, care for all. Consulting producer Craig Blair. Executive producers Morris Ruskin, Sophia Rovaletti, Melissa Bale, Carrie Anderson, Preston Bebas, Jonathan Trevis, James Huntsman, and Lisa Gutberle.
Whenever you're by my side, you'll never.
Co-producers Anthony Gaudioso and James Gaudioso. Executive producers Jay Burnley, Stephen Paterno, Jeremy Walton, David Lyons, Jen Russo, Ian Michaels. Produced by Mike Stern, PGA. Written by Mike Stern. Directed by Sonia O'Hara. More credits roll.
Darling, please wear this ring. My dear, it's where we.
Audio description created by 3Play Media. Written by Sam Jankowski and narrated by Olivia Willis.
Admire the perfect life we have built. I'll grant you every desire. We hold all the cards, my queen. I am your king. You don't have to look very far to see what the future will bring.
This film is dedicated to the memory of Joseph Eichler. For Jen. Copyright 2022 Mid-Century Movie LLC. All rights reserved.